Hello, you lovely lot. I wanted to take a moment to share an exciting announcement with you all. I will be doing a live show for Happy Mum, Happy Baby at the Podcast Show in London on the 22nd of May. This will be a live episode of this very podcast featuring me and a very special, soon to be announced, guest. Get ready for a candid conversation, unfiltered truths, laughs, invaluable non-judgmental advice, and lived experiences. Dive into the complexities of parenting while juggling work, relationships, and personal growth. And we'll be talking beyond the baby years. As well as the live episode, the show will also include a Q&A with both me and my guest. Tickets go on sale this Friday the 26th of April at 10 a.m, but anyone who is part of the Happy Mum Happy Baby newsletter will be getting early access to tickets on Wednesday the 24th of April at 10 a.m. To sign up to the newsletter and for more information about the event, please head to happymumhappybaby.com/events. I can't wait to see you there. And welcome to a brand new episode of Happy Mum, Happy Baby, the podcast. Today's guest is actually someone that I went to school with many moons ago. She is an incredible actress. She's currently on tour with 222, A Ghost Story, a play very close to my heart. She's also juggling that with a two-year-old. It's Louisa Litton. Hello!
Woo! Who's losing her mind? Woo!
I mean, it's a lot. I think that play alone is a lot, like that emotional roller coaster that you go on as Jenny every night. It's difficult to manage, I think.
When I first read the script, I was like, this is just like reading me. I just felt like I was reading myself. So I thought, like, oh, this will be easy. But what I didn't really understand or sort of take into consideration at the time was, you know, I'm not coming home every night. So I'm doing this show. For those of you that haven't seen it, it's about a couple who, I don't really know what I can give away, but basically it's an emotional roller coaster for Jenny, the role that I play. And it's all surrounding a baby who's nearly one and all the emotions that come with having a baby. So obviously me then being on tour and being away from her, it's been so tough. It's been so much harder than I thought. You know, you've toured now with three kids. Really hard. But we're halfway, and at the same time, I've absolutely loved it because I'm finally doing what I love again, you know?
Yeah. And what a piece to be doing as well.
Yeah.
It's an incredible piece within itself. I mean, juggling that with motherhood isn't the easiest of things to do, plus being on tour. Have you managed to take her with you at all or not?
Every week is different. We are literally winging it. I've had so many people say to me, like, how are you doing this? And what's the setup? And I'm like, well, it changes week by week because obviously, you know, with having a two-year-old, before the job started, I put everything into place. She was traveling on this day, on this train, at this time. And obviously, if she gets ill or, you know, anything can happen. So at the moment, what we've done is week by week, it's sort of changing. So some weeks she's managed to come with me and my husband because he can work remotely, which is amazing. And then other weeks she's been at home, been my mum's been helping out and I've just sort of been commuting, coming back and forth. And other weeks I just haven't seen her for sort of 5 days at a time and then I travel home for the days off.
And it's so hard though, even if they are with you, because, you know, mine are slightly older now, they're at school, but being two, if she's with you on tour, you are literally full-time mummying the whole day. Not that I ever think anyone part-time, I think you're a full-time mum no matter what you do, but you're doing all of that stuff in a day, then come 6 o'clock going to the theatre. There's no switch off. There's no space. There's no let up. I think with that show, I do feel like you have to kind of be able to switch off from it or kind of step away from it in some way to go straight into, you know, being up at six the next day and into that before going into another show. It's intense.
That's what I found hard, I guess. And also the days that she's not with me, my brain still wakes me up at 6 o'clock in the morning. So we're really doing two shows a day. We're doing 8 shows in 5 days. So we're doing, you know, a lot. And I finish at, say, 10 o'clock. I get back and I'm like, right, I'll go straight to bed. I'm wired from the show. But, you know, you're still on an adrenaline rush.
Yeah.
So then I fall asleep maybe 12, 1, and then I'm up at 6 because I'm used to being up at 6. So I mean, I sound like I'm moaning. I'm not.
You're not moaning.
It's great. I'm so lucky to have the job. I guess I just feel like I've thrown myself into the deep end. Like, she's two, she's at a really, you know, that age is quite difficult anyway. And her whole life has just changed.
Yeah.
Before this job, I was at home all day, every day with her.
Yeah.
You know, I've worked, but a day here or a week there, nothing like this. But also, I do feel like being on tour is the most difficult job we would ever have as an actor.
Yeah.
So I've done it now.
Yeah.
I've done like the hardest bit, if that makes sense. You know, when she's older, I'll be able to explain it more. If I'm filming, for example, I'll be in one place.
Yeah.
So she can either be with me or be at home. Whereas at the moment, whenever she comes to visit mummy at work, I'm somewhere else.
Yeah.
So she doesn't really understand. Like, what are you doing, mum? What is this job you have?
But that in itself is really tricky, because every like Tuesday, you're in a new place. You're in a new place to stay, call your home for a little while. You settle and you figure out where everything is. And then it's gear change, different place.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I remember, because I've toured loads before I was a mum and loved it, because,
yeah,
you know, you find your local coffee shop and just, you know, you just the fun things. Whereas this time around, if I've got good enough Wi-Fi so I can FaceTime her, if she's coming where the closest like soft play is, there's been so many times that I've planned a whole fun week for her and she comes and she just hates everything that we're doing because she's just out of her routine.
Yeah.
So yeah, touring, it is different. When I first got the job, there was a small part of me that was like, oh, I'm going to get a break. I'm going to get time away and be able to sit and read a book. I bought a book on week one. I still haven't opened it. Like,
no!
It's just not what you think it's going to be. I don't know why. I just haven't had a second. Still, I haven't had a second, even
it's
when
weird,
she's not
isn't
there.
It?
Yeah, it's crazy.
So let's talk about your childhood. Where did you grow up? Did you have siblings? What was it like?
So I'm an only child. I grew up in London. We lived on an estate. I was there until I was about maybe, God, I don't even know. I think until I left home at, say, 18.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was just me. As you know, I went to a theatre school, which was crazy because nobody in my family had sort of ever been in the industry. So it was a new world to everyone.
And what was your route into it? Were you like a dancer or did you just love everything?
I think I love dancing. So I started ballet and tap and all classes like that at Italia Conti, which was
right.
Not far from where we were living at the time. Yeah.
Kelsey, we talk about this. The enemies.
Yeah, I know. The enemy. I know. We talk about it too because I know Kelsey obviously really well. So I started dance classes as a kid. That was my first love. Whether or not I'd ever be a professional dancer, I don't know, but I loved it. And then I don't really know how, but at a certain age, I guess, I auditioned to go to Italia Conti or Sylvia Young,
yeah,
like as a secondary school, got into Sylvia's and that was it. And then I was in. And then obviously I got EastEnders when I was 15 years old. So I was sort of just thrown into this world at a young age.
Did you manage to juggle the EastEnders and Sylvia's? How did you do that? Because obviously you would have been on set a lot.
Yeah, so Mr. Mack,
yeah,
who was our English teacher, for those that don't know, who is an absolute legend, who I spoke to the other day, by the way. We still speak.
Oh, I love him so much.
He's amazing.
I think all of us who are creative after Sylvia's and have gone into past, I think Mr. Mack is one of those teachers who definitely left a mark on all of us, and he's a massive reason.
All of us.
Yeah, what we're doing.
He was incredible. He was an English teacher, but he would like jump on the tables and he was crazy, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Anyway, so he was my mentor. He was my, what's it called when they have to come to work? And
tutor.
He was my tutor.
No!
So he would come onto the EastEnders set and do like classes with me. Yeah, you can imagine.
Oh my gosh.
But basically, I joined EastEnders a few months before finishing school. So really, I was there for GCSE time.
Yeah.
So I would just go back to school to do my GCSEs and that was it. So I pretty much left school a few months early.
Yeah.
And I would just go back to do my GCSEs, which was, yeah. I can't really remember it though. I feel like it must have been full on, but I don't really remember that time.
Also, I think things like that were quite normalised at Sylvia's, I would say.
Yeah, of course. I think to my family, like my mum and dad, they was like, what is going on? You know, you've got your exams to do. But yeah, you're right. At Sylvia's, we were always working. So we were always in and out of school. But I loved it. I loved it so much. And then that was it. I joined EastEnders at 15 and it's gone on from there.
I would say, even though you're an only child, your group at Sylvia's are so tight-knit, like your girlfriends.
Still to this day.
Yeah.
My best friends are from school.
Yeah.
Well, most of my best friends are still from my year at school. Yeah.
You kind of grew up together.
We did. And it's so funny because you look back now at times where we'd say when we were leaving, please, can we stay in touch? And now we're like changing each other's babies' nappies. Like, it's crazy, isn't it? You know, stay in touch. We basically live together.
That's so lovely. Yeah. Did you ever look to the future and think of yourself as a mum and having your own family?
Always wanted kids. I always said I wanted a big family because I was an only child. And I don't feel like I missed out growing up, but I think I just wanted what my friends had, you know, yeah. siblings and big Christmases and all these sort of big events weren't that big for me.
Mm.
Just me, my mum, dad and my grandparents, which was lovely. But, you know, I definitely feel like I wanted a bigger family growing up. And I always knew I wanted to be a mum. I never really, until I met Ben, was ever with the right person to have
really?
Kids.
Did you ever wonder about it, though? Because that's obviously a massive part of being the right person. But I think we're so channeled growing up that we're going to meet someone, we're going to get, like, whatever that is. And I feel like sometimes we zone in on people that are really wrong, but we're kind of like, actually, there are these steps that I've got to take to become a mum or...
100%. I was with someone for off and on for about 6 years. It was not a great relationship, put it that way, which we can kind of laugh about now. But, you know, at the time it was chaos. I don't think I ever really had the thought whilst being with him of having children.
Mm.
I knew I wanted kids, which is quite telling, isn't it? I knew I wanted kids, but probably didn't really want them with him. I don't know why I held on for so long, but we do what we do. And then after him, actually, was when I went into panic mode. And I remember thinking, because at that time I must have been about 20, I can't remember. I've been with Ben now for nearly 6 years. Mm. I'm 34. We'll do the math. I remember panicking then, thinking, what now happens? Yeah. And you know what? There was a part of me that I would have found a way. I'd have had a child on my own because having a child for me was like the ultimate in life. That's not for everyone, but it just always was with me. Yeah. So then when I met Ben, I just remember thinking, how lucky am I that I've met someone that I just want to have kids with, just wanted everything there and then.
Did you talk about it with him straight away?
Oh, I think probably on our first date. It was very open from the start. I remember we went on a blind date and by the end of the date, it's so weird, isn't it? Because looking back, I'm like, wow, we must have been mad. But I wanted to know, like, he was from up north and I wanted to know, do you want to move back there? Because I'm not going there. Do you want kids? Because I definitely do. And it wasn't even in a way of like, oh, I want these things from you. It was just, I'm an adult now. I've been through a lot. This is what I want in life.
Yeah.
You game or not?
yeah. And I guess it's good early days to kind of filter the not that other stuff. Let's not waste time.
And then it was just fun. Exactly. Yeah. And then it was fun because we sort of got the awkward thing out the way of, you know, this might not work between us, but if that's what you want in life, then great, because that's what I want too. It was never really about us to start with. And then, everything did then happen really quickly. And we've been together, 6 years. We're married. We have a child. She's two. Crazy.
When did that shift come though, from kind of going, we're going to have a baby at some point, to kind of going, actually, let's...
Lockdown.
Of course it was. Something to do.
Something to do. It was because we were due to get married and the first lockdown happened. So then my wedding was like postponed by a year. And I remember at the time saying, if this goes on any longer, I don't want to wait. I'm 34 now. So I was 32 when I had her. I always wanted to get married first. But I guess when you just are with someone and you just know, I was like, well, what difference is it going to make to our lives if we're married or not? Like, I'm in this forever with you.
Well, weddings were such an uncertain thing at that point, weren't they? The rules were always changing. You got married abroad, didn't you? Did you get married abroad?
In the end, yeah.
So
we ripped out the papers and was like, let's start again. Yeah, so that's sort of where it come from. And I remember I was working at the time. I was in EastEnders at the time. And I thought, you know what? I'm so fortunate that I am working.
Mm.
And at a time where many people were not.
Yeah.
So I knew that we had like that stability. We had no idea what was happening with the wedding. So we kind of joked and was like, let's just see what happens. And it happened really quick. We were
really?
Yeah, we were so, so lucky. Like, first month quick.
What were your symptoms and were you a bit like, surely not, or were you like, oh, of course?
It was just before Christmas, and on Christmas Day I had a tequila And I went to bed and I was like, I'm going to vom. And I'm not like, you know, I can, not that I can drink, but I would never really be sick. And I thought, there's no way this has happened that quickly. And that was my first symptom. And then I did a test, like on Boxing Day, I did a test. And that was it. And we were like, oh no. But we're not married. And we were all these things that we needed to do. So yeah, it happened really quick.
Oh, yeah. I love that. I love that.
Yeah, we're so lucky.
But you just never know with these things how long it's going to take. And
that was my point to Ben. So I'll go back. Yeah. So Ben's 2 years younger than me. So he's kind of was in no rush. And I was like, we don't know how long this is going to take. And so when it happened that quickly, he was like, I'm like, sorry.
Did you do the test together?
Yeah, like he was in bed and I was like, right, I need to do a test because I don't feel right. I did it in the bathroom and then I sort of came onto him and he was like silent for about 2 hours. He didn't know what to say. He was stunned. Yeah, we were together. Crazy, isn't it? It's the best moment ever. It was amazing.
And there's no feeling like it. Do you know what I mean? I feel like when other people share, you get that glimmer of it. The same with like the proposal stuff. I think it's a very unique feeling, those things. I don't think they come up for me. They've not happened in any other part of my life. That feeling that comes up.
It's funny, I was speaking to someone about this the other day about how having Aura, as in giving birth, was the ultimate for me. Like, it makes me want to cry now. It was the ultimate. And I do feel like ever since having her, the things that are supposed to feel like, oh, I'm like, yes, nice. That was it.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is why I can't really, with like, I'm in an RN at the moment, do we have another one? Like, if we're fortunate enough to be able to do that. I know everybody says, no, it does come again, but I'm like, I'll never have that feeling. I'll never have that love. I don't understand how I do it again. But I guess that's because all I've ever experienced is just me.
Yeah.
You know, my mum always says, I would never love another child the way I loved you. That's why I didn't. So I guess that has sort of been ingrained
in
into me.
Does Ben have siblings?
Yeah. So he wants more. He's got a brother and a sister.
Right. Isn't it funny though? Because that's what you set out to do. Like you said, saying earlier, you wanted a big family. Whereas now you've got one, you're kind of like mirroring what your mum has said before.
I know, and it's bad. But also you don't know the reality. You know, I don't know how you do it. I was like, yeah, I want 3 kids. And now I'm like, I'm just about managing with one. Like, I don't know how I do this again.
All I can say is the chaos.
How do you do it?
You know the chaos you said you were chasing earlier, that big family vibe. The chaos is real and you have to go at some point, go, I'm just going to embrace this chaos. It's different vibes. Yeah, I can remember being in a lift somewhere with Buzz when he was like 10 months old and someone got in. They'd had two and she said, your heart basically just grows. Your heart, it's like it doesn't overshadow the love for the first. It doesn't replace, doesn't do anything else other than just like that love stays the same. And actually, when my kids are nice to each other, that love for each of them kind of grows again, like that, even from when they were like tiny. And so your love is still evolving and deepening and stuff as time goes on. It's really...
As time goes on.
Yeah. How was your pregnancy?
It's so funny because I just don't ever talk about this. So I'm more than happy to, but I never do. I really didn't enjoy being pregnant. Yeah. Now, it was fine, as in medically, health-wise, I was fine. I was very lucky. I felt sick, obviously, for the first, I think, 5 months, but many people do. And it was all I ever wanted, but there was just something that I just didn't enjoy it. And I don't know if it's because I was so worried, but, you know, outwardly not worried, and I kept so much in. A lot of it was, and it's so selfish and crazy now looking back, but was to do with my body changing.
Yeah. Do you think as well you were very aware of that because of being on set, because of having to hide bumps and signs of it? Was that part of it?
I think so. And also I was doing a miscarriage storyline.
Oh, for God's sake.
In the show.
That makes me want to cry that you'd have to be going through that at the same time.
I know. And it's hard because I don't want to speak about it in a way that it comes with, they were great with me. It's not their fault.
No, no, no.
The storyline started and then I got pregnant. Yeah, so it's not like they said, oh, you're pregnant. Hey, we're going to hit you with this storyline. It was just how it happened. But my character had multiple miscarriages, you know, like throughout my whole pregnancy. Obviously, I was there till I was 8 months pregnant. So I think maybe subconsciously that is what affected me.
Yeah.
Like looking back, I think probably something I should probably, you know, really look into. But it must have been something to do with that, because I was grieving a miscarriage on set whilst my, it makes me feel sick, baby was kicking.
Yeah.
It was so, so, so strange. So I didn't really enjoy it, but I don't know if it was that side of it or if it was just the, or maybe both, the body change, the cravings. I wasn't in control of what was happening. And I do feel like if there is a next time, I will feel very differently towards it.
Yeah.
It was almost like, as well, I didn't really know what was coming out the other end. You know, the moment she was there, I was like, what was I thinking? What was I worried about? But it was a funny time. It was like I was going through the motions, but not really like embracing what was happening.
Would people have been checking in on you at work and kind of going, are you okay to do this? And because you want to, I think a lot of women don't want to feel like they can't do something because they're pregnant. So I'm fine. I'm fine. So kind of doing it.
100%. Everybody was amazing. The directors, you know, my cast, obviously everybody was amazing. They are. It's a family there. Yeah. And even now I am a mum. Yep, it's fine. Yep, I can do it. Yep, I can drop her off and 4 minutes later be at this meeting. Well, no, I can't actually physically do that, but I have to say yes because, you know, if it's not me, it'll be someone else. Mm-hmm. Someone else will take that job. Yeah, it's tough. It's hard for any mum in any industry, in any, you know, it's not just within what we do. Something comes along and it is your whole world and your main priority, but you also have to be, or society tells you, you have to also be this. And yeah, especially at work, I couldn't say, no, I'm not going to do this. I had a storyline that I had to complete before I left the show. I would never, because of my professional head, ever say otherwise.
Yeah.
It was fine. I'm not saying I shouldn't have done it because I did it. You know, I think I did it well. And also, I guess what was pushing me was the true stories that I was telling. You know, I was doing it for those women and I was so fortunate to be pregnant. So I had to do it for those people, for those women. You know, it could have been me. You just don't. Yeah, it was a lot. And I think that it was a heavy time.
Well, and also for a lot of people, first pregnancies that don't come after a loss, there can be a lovely naivety that comes with that, you know, unless people have been, you know, sharing stories within that. But most people, it's only when you have a miscarriage that other people go, oh, I've had one. It's for me over the years, because I had a miscarriage before I had Buzz, so 10 years ago.
Right.
It almost felt like a little secret. You know, people didn't talk about it. And I think it's becoming much more talked about now. But I think because of that sort of secrecy around it or that silence, it means that you're allowed in that first pregnancy to be naive to the dangers that can happen, to those losses that can happen, the risks. Whereas for you, I feel like maybe doing the work that you were doing at that time, doing that storyline, it's like you had gone through those losses because in a way, like you were so much more open to other people's experiences and how pregnancies can end.
Yeah, and also a big part of the storyline, I should say, was that she had endometriosis.
Right.
So another part of the storyline was how difficult it could be to have a baby.
Yeah.
I also felt so fortunate that I was, you know, healthy and pregnant. So I guess this, what I'm saying is there's probably so much more to it than how was your pregnancy? Yeah, not great. It was because there was so much going on.
Yeah.
And as you said, like, yeah, maybe because I was on screen and I was so aware of this big change happening to me, like physically. It's crazy, isn't it? And I look back now and I'm like, oh my God, look at that massive bump. It was amazing. And at the time I was like, hide it. You know,
can we put it behind a plant pot? What can we hide it with?
I mean, towards the end, you could see it in my earlobe. Like, there was no way. There was no way.
Well, because you're so petite as well. So I imagine, you know.
I ballooned. Like,
really?
I'll show you a photo after. I was. Yeah.
And how did you feel going towards the birth? Like with work going on and those massive storylines, did you have a lot of headspace to kind of go, actually, how is this baby coming out of me?
I'm your typical story. I did a hypnobirthing course and I was going to be in the water and there was going to be fairy lights and I was going to be playing my Jill Scott album and da, 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 da. So going in, I was actually really sort of confident. I wasn't afraid at all. I was at home. My water didn't break. I ended up having an emergency cesarean. That's basically where I'm going with this story, like many of
Got
us
that.
Do.
Yeah.
Even at home, you know, like the contraction started and I was like, this is it. I was really excited.
Really?
Yeah. I didn't know what I was having. We didn't find out. So I was really excited to see what was coming.
Because some people, like, I knew I was having a girl, or, and I feel like for some people,
I thought it was a boy.
Really?
Everybody told me I was having a boy. Yeah, right. Everybody told me I was having a boy. We only really had boys' names.
Oh, really?
I didn't name her for the first few days. So he's like, well, what are we going to... So yes, but long story short, I just couldn't dilate.
Right.
I only got to 4 centimetres okay. on day 3. Yeah, it was crazy. Anyway, I ended up having everything, epidural, they broke my waters. And yeah, we had an emergency section in the end. And obviously, none of it matters because she's here, but it took me months to get over that I hadn't had the birth that I wanted.
Really?
Yeah, it really affected me, which is silly, which is crazy. But I just had it in my head and in my heart that this is how I was going to do it. And it didn't go to plan. And it really affected me. Even looking at her, knowing, like, well, she's here, she's perfect, nothing happened. Yeah, that really took a lot to get over.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Do you think having a plan almost makes you feel like you failed because you didn't follow that plan? And had you not had that plan, in some ways, you'd have been open to anything.
I do think it was helpful. I'm pleased I did it. But I think, as you said, because I then got so obsessed with how it was going to happen. And also because my contractions, even when they were like, they were 5 minutes apart when I got to the hospital, but because I was only 2 centimetres at that point, I obviously didn't get to the point of the pain being so unbearable that you can't, you know, stand. So in my head, I felt like I could have done it.
Yeah.
It wasn't me that didn't allow it. You know, it wasn't that I said, I can't do this. So there was a big part of me that was like, yeah, but I could have done it. If only I just dilated. You know, the truth is I would have died if this happened years ago because my body just wasn't letting me do it. So I, you know, it is so strange. I don't know why we all have it in our heads, even the way people phrase it, like, oh, did you give birth naturally? Or just the way people phrase it is so bad.
Yeah,
because you're like, well, no, but you know
what, some of the best hypnobirthing practitioners that I know have multiple children and had experiences where they've had to go for an emergency C-section and actually feel that the work that they did leading up to that, and it's why they have become practitioners and kind of, you know, go down that path with other mums, is so that a mum can feel empowered and calm no matter what happens. But there is this big societal thing. I'd like to think it's shifting, but I mean, you're only 2 years in and you're still carrying, you had that guilt of not doing it the way that you had set out to.
Yeah.
And it's really difficult, isn't it? I think people love hearing the birth stories, you know, however that happened. And actually, we do have to talk because so many people have emergency C-sections or have elective C-sections, and that's absolutely fine. That does not diminish you as a mum and the fact that you've grown a human and you have birthed a human. You absolutely have.
Yeah. Like, I hate to even say it out loud because I don't want to be judged, but I just felt like as a woman, it's something in life I wanted to experience, and I feel like that experience was taken away from me.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Even though she's here, like, that's what it was. I was like, but I wanted to experience that. I wanted to know what it felt like to go full term, like, labour. That's what I want. But I don't know why, because there's nobody around me that's made me feel like that. Not my mum, not Ben, not my friends. Where does that come from? It's strange.
Yeah.
Why do I feel that way? You know, as I said, I could have died if that was many years ago. So I should just feel happy that she's here.
It's very hard, isn't it? When those thoughts or those feelings are in your head and people go, but she's here and she's healthy, so just be happy. Well, stuff in your head doesn't respond to that.
It doesn't. And you don't know how to control it, I guess.
Yeah.
But I have. I've dealt with it now. Yeah, it took a while. And also because I was in a 3-day labour, I was exhausted. So for months, and then I got COVID when she was 2 weeks old. It was like, I think I was just so exhausted maybe for so long that it took me a while to sort of catch up with myself to be sane again.
Yeah. How did that all affect your mental health? Because you have done an amazing campaign with NSPCC about perinatal health.
Isn't it incredible?
Honestly, watching it, just give us a brief outline of what the actual film is, because it's so beautiful.
It was actually not to do with NSPCC to start with. It was brought to me. There was a campaign for another company. I'm not probably allowed to say who or how it come about, but people had written in letters like to do with mental health as a whole. And this letter came in, and my friend who was working on the project said, oh, read this. What do you think? And it was from a mum. And I think her child at the time was 8, but it was writing a letter, probably a little bit like what you do at the end of this, to herself as a mum when she first became a mum. And I read it, and I remember I was in the bath and I sobbed, because I was like, this is how we feel. So the film that I did, it's a short film, and it's one woman's story, one woman's letter about being lonely in a world where even if you're surrounded by people, you just feel lonely. And we are in a world now where people don't necessarily speak. A lot of things are done via the phone or WhatsApp or Instagram, or there's so many ways that we're connected to each other now, but there's no actual real human connection. And how having a and having a child, a baby in that time, you sort of put on this act, you know, you want people to think that everything's fine, but inside you're lost. And that's sort of what the short is. Anyway, NSPCC picked it up because they're doing a campaign for mental health within new parents, male and female. I'm so proud of it. I've had so many women message me saying, you know, thank you, I'm only acting, but for sort of telling our story. But I felt the same. I felt the same. I could have friends over, or Ben would be sat next to me on the sofa, and you just feel like no one understands how you feel, how you could possibly be feeling. Like, I was the happiest I've ever been in my life, but at the same time, I was so out of debt, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And you feel like certain thoughts that go through your head, you can't say to anybody. I remember standing at the top of the stairs just thinking, like, we're going to fall down the stairs. But don't ever say that out loud, because people think it's, these things are so normal.
Yeah.
These things are so normal. Just imagining the worst all the time, and just feeling like, you know, you're on your third night feed, or they've been up for 8 hours of the whole night, and you're so exhausted, and you just think, I just don't know how I'm going to get through tomorrow. But you mustn't say anything. But you can, because we've all had these thoughts, or most people have had these thoughts or feelings, because you're exhausted. And it's a form of torture.
Yes, exactly.
Sleep deprivation is a form of torture, you know. So it does crazy things to your mind. So that's basically what the whole campaign is just about: speaking out, speaking to somebody. And if you don't have anybody necessarily to speak to, you can obviously call their helpline, which is amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing. And your girlfriends, there are more babies within that. So how has that changed your friendship group, you know, having the babies and the toddlers involved?
We could meet up all day, and by the end of the day be like, I hope you're okay, because I don't know a single thing about you or your life. It's all about nappies and bottle feeding times and nap times. And it changes so much, doesn't it? A lot of my friends, we all went to school together, but we're sort of in separate pockets now. We try to sort of do stuff as and when we can away from the kids, but not nowhere near as often as we used to. We were all on holidays, and there was so much, you know. All of my friends, you know, there's so many kids between us all now, it's not the same. But then what is so amazing is when we do get together with our kids and they're all sat together, you're like, wow, this is so special. You know, when you've got such a special friendship, and then your friends could potentially become friends, like, that's something else, right? But of course, all I want to do is go on a girls' holiday right now and talk about other things.
I find it fascinating how so often, though, that will always come back to the kids. Like, my best mates, when I see them, I leave and I'm like, oh, we didn't finish that conversation. And because I didn't give them that, like, the input of that, I hope they don't think that because I've left it there, you know. Yeah. You just start overthinking things.
Does it get easier when your kids get older, though? Because do you feel like you can sort of meet up and they can do their own thing, so you're, or not really?
Well, at times, like Cara came over last weekend and we had a big old sleepover with her too.
Oh, lovely.
It was really, really lovely. And I think there's a weird level of calm. Like, so I've got three, so add two more kids into the mix. Weirdly, like they all start playing together and it's calmer than when it's just my three. In a way.
Yeah, okay.
But the flip side of that is there's still different meltdowns happening from different, you know, there's still different pushbacks.
So did
like
you get time to actually catch up, I guess, when they went to
bed? We did. But because it was Strictly night, we stayed up, we'd watched Strictly, we'd had like a little dance competition afterwards. So I think it was about 10 o'clock before all the kids were actually asleep because it was a weekend. And we both just went to bed. We're like, we'll see you in the morning.
Yeah, exhausted. Yeah. Oh, can I come next time? Let me
tell. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. The kids are quite judgy.
I haven't seen...
when it comes to their dancing competitions, they're quite judgy.
Right, well, it's always only two, so she'll just be sat there clapping, so that'll be fine. Yeah, it's the same thing. Like, even seeing, you know, the last few times I've seen Cara, yeah, we've had the kids. Like, it's...
Yeah.
And I just think, oh, maybe when Aura's a bit older, it'll be easier. Because obviously, you know, up until now, it's been, don't touch that, don't do that. She can't get that. Whereas now she's sort of very steady, obviously, and able. Yeah. And, you know, yeah, it is easier because a lot of my friends have kids of a similar age. Like, we all sort of had kids within a few years. So one can look after the other, or, you know, she can take that out of her mouth. Like, you know, we've kind of got that. It's just different. It's just, everything's different.
Yeah, yeah. Soon enough it'll be just us again, you know. But that, that's interesting, like seeing how your friends' kids, like how everyone grows up, and at some point, you know, someone's going to be a teenager and they're going to be sat with you at the table, you know, whereas they'd all be off playing, suddenly they're with you. Then we'll have the teenage years where they're absolutely with us, and then they're going off out on their own. Like, there's so many different things I think ahead
aspects. Yeah. How old is Buzz now?
9. Yeah, mine are 9, 7 and 5. He's up to below my chin now, which feels really, really weird. Yeah. Buddy keeps telling me he's up to my boob, which, you know, he really enjoys.
Don't tell your friends at the school. Yeah.
It does just sort of fly by. And I think what's really important is that when you have friends and you've got kids, I think it's so important. Yes, your kids are going to have meltdowns. They might cry. You might cry. But you carry on. Having those get-togethers, no matter how messy it is, because it might be your child having the meltdowns one day, but it'll be someone else's next time. And yeah, it seems so important to lean on those people who do get you. They understand you completely.
And that's what we are so lucky to have with all of my friends, even my friends that are not from school. You know, I'm speaking as if all my friends are from school. They're not. There's no judgment. I guess I'm one of the last, I'd say, to start having babies. So I've sort of witnessed it all. So for me, I don't feel that way. Because if anything, I go, help me. Have her. What do I do? But I am lucky. Yeah, there's no judgment at all within my friendship group. And it's about leaning on each other and asking for advice that you just have to ask.
Yeah.
One friend's advice may not work. But you're all winging it. That's what you have to remember.
Well, I wonder where it comes from, where we have that feeling of having to have all the answers when we can't possibly have all the answers. Like, the answers are always changing to every question, I feel like. You know, it's never what works one day might not work next. But I feel like... It's so weird, isn't it? I don't know whether it's because we sometimes feel like our mums might have had all the answers, or our parents, or other people might have all the answers, but... really, we are just winging it, and we have to let go of all that noise that clouds
it. I think what it comes from is the fear of your, you know, I'm now sort of getting to the point of, okay, I'm not just looking after a baby, I'm creating a human, a person. And it's that thing of, am I doing this right for her sake? Not for my sake, but am I doing, should I be teaching her that? As I said, I didn't tell you, I was telling someone else, we were painting a pumpkin this morning because she's not interested in carving out a pumpkin. Obviously she too, she has no idea what Halloween is, but Ben bought us a pumpkin yesterday as something nice to do with each other because I'm not going to be here for Halloween and I'm upset about it and she has no idea what's going on. Anyway, we're painting this pumpkin and she wanted to like dip the thing back in and I said, no darling, and she threw the paintbrush at my face and I was like, what do I do now? So she's two, does she know what she's done is wrong? So I was like, please, can you say sorry? Like, I'm trying to do the whole like gentle parenting approach. she just literally looked at me like this and just carried on. And I thought, I don't know. So I'm at an estate now where I don't know what to do. I don't know how to parent a two-year-old because I've never done it before.
Yeah.
You know, every day is a first. That's what I'm getting at, is every day is a first. So, but now what's scary is it's not about, am I giving her enough formula? It's how do I teach her to be kind and not throw the paintbrush in my face? Like, I don't know what to do.
In so some ways, though, when you get to these bits, those things that caused you so much anguish when they were newborns seem so simple, even though I know that the newborn stage, I literally liken the first 3 weeks of having a newborn to hell. Like, and I said that so early on, and I kind of stick by that, even though it makes me feel guilty towards those kids who are older now. But if I look back compared to some of the things that we need to face now, I'm like, oh, you know, now you've got someone who doesn't comply, if you want to use that word, or doesn't, you know, you have to really try and work your way
through.
Yeah, like I said, I cried last weekend because no one was blooming listening. My kids don't listen to me now. You know, it's this weird shift in dynamic.
I don't know what to do.
To be honest, sometimes I just
the
have to turn to Tom.
The truth was today, I ignored it. Yeah. I went on for about 10 minutes about why you should say sorry. Please say sorry to mummy. She knows what I'm saying. She understands every single word I say and she knows how to say sorry.
Yeah.
Did she say sorry? No, she carried on painting. Then I thought, do I take the paints off her? But should I be doing that? She's only two. She's not fat. Anyway, in the end, I got another paintbrush out and I carried on painting. I ignored it. And I was like, I just don't know what to do. I need to like read a book on this part because I'm not ready for this.
But I think it's the same thing. Like, so if I look back to having a newborn and I'm like, I read all the books before Buzz arrived and he hadn't read a single one. And actually it turns out that every baby is different. And the important thing is that you tune in to your baby. I think toddlers and children are different. Like, I have to look at all three of my kids and I know that when certain things happen, I have to deal with it in a different way to each of them because different things work. You know, where I can be firm with one, the firmer approach with another simply will not work. It's like two bits of a magnet that will just like bash against each other.
How
just
interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
So therefore, you always feel like, I don't, what do I do? And there's definitely a thing at the moment where there's no listening happening. And I do the feeble thing sometimes of going, Tom, you know, he's not like I'm telling dad on the situation.
Yeah.
You know,
do they sort of listen to mum or dad? Is it all?
I can tell myself sometimes that they simply don't listen to me.
Okay.
And therefore it's quite a relief when I realise, oh no, they're also not listening to Tom. That makes me feel better. I mean, obviously you've still got a child who isn't listening.
Like, yeah.
But it's just nice to know that it's not just me. You
just
know.
You, yeah.
But
yeah.
Yeah, I feel like I'm learning every day. It's, you know.
We are. We have to.
Yeah.
And then the best bit of advice I was ever given was have like three people that you go to and that is it. So from the moment she was born, someone said to me, it was actually a director at work when I was pregnant, said, just have your key three people and nobody else because otherwise you'll be so confused with all the advice. So still to this day, I have three people that if something happens, like the paint situation, I will ask them. And now you're my fourth, actually. I might add you into the mix because you've got three and they're older. just otherwise you can get like inundated with advice and it's too much. And I was the same as you. I read every book and
It's
but yeah,
hard.
You learn as you go, I guess.
You do.
And now I'm at terrible twos.
Oh, mate, do you know what?
Yeah.
And then they become a three-nager. Like, so it's never... But, you know, sometimes it's amazing and I think you just have to take the rough with the smooth. Every day's a mixed bag.
Yeah, of course.
Louisa, if you were to write a letter on motherhood, who would it be to and what would you say?
I would probably write a letter to my mum. Makes me feel quite emotional because I'm an only child growing up. Like, my mum and dad are still together, but I was my mum's whole world. Now it's all right. She's not got no interest in me at all now. So, you know, we had such a strong bond. But then I got to an age where I was a teenager and we just did not get on. Like, it was just hellish for both of us. So my letter would just be like, I understand it now. Like, that overwhelming feeling of love and worry and care, and I get it now. That's why she used to in my words, drive me mad, because you can't describe that feeling, right? And the worry and the concern. And so I think it would just be to her to say, I understand it now and thank you, because she is my rock now. I am her mum.
Yeah.
You know, I get it now. I get why she did half of what she did. Nothing was bad. It's because it becomes your whole world.
How has having a baby changed your relationship with your mum?
We were always close.
Yeah.
We just had our times. We had our times. But now, yeah, it's changed it drastically. Well, I'd say now we're closer than ever.
Does that give you like peace of mind or hope, I guess, for when Aura is older? Like realizing that, because people always like, oh, girls when they're teenagers or whatever. Does that kind of make you go, it will be fine? Like there might be some pushback, but actually you came back and so will she.
Yeah, I think so, because I have experienced it. So I know that feeling of, I know how I felt with my mum was that I wanted to be my own person and break free and have my own, you know. Now looking back, I'm like, well, I was 15. Where did I think I was going at, you know, 11 o'clock at night? And yeah, I guess it is the same. So it's just knowing the boundaries of making them feel independent, but also still having boundaries, I guess, in place.
Yeah.
I hope that what I've learned is, yeah, how to deal with her when she's a teenager, in short, is what I'm saying. And if not, my mum can have her, because...
She's done it before. She's fine.
She's done it before. It would be a letter to my mum to sort of say, thank you, sorry, and I understand now.
I like that. So we finish the podcast with you completing three sentences. First sentence is, being a mum means.
Oh, you're going to make me cry, aren't you? Everything and more.
I'll take it. The next one is, since having a child, I...
Yeah, have put life into perspective.
And I'm happy when?
At the moment, when I'm at home with Aura. Put her to bed at the end of the day and I feel like I've got through another day.
Yeah. Thank you. I know that touring is so difficult, and I can remember being on 5 or 6 of the last tour that I did and just feeling like, what on earth am I doing? And Tom texted me that night and just said, look, in 6 weeks' time, or 5 weeks' time, whatever it was, you're going to be at home, you're going to be doing the bedtime routine, and all of that time would have vanished. So make sure you're making the most of it while you're doing it. That's the only advice I can give you right now.
So
make
true.
The most of it, because by Christmas you're going to be home and, you know, on this whole new chapter. So just embrace it.
And read this book. I need to open this book. That's what I need to do.
When you find yourself waking up at 6 o'clock in the morning, just start reading. There we go.
It's so, 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 so true. Because I already know, come December, I'll be back home thinking, I've not got a job. What am I going to do? Yeah. I know.
And this is filling your cup in a different way. You know, this is you doing what you love.
Yeah, it's just letting go of the guilt and remembering you were a person before, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. All right then, my love. Thank you so much. This
Thank
has been delightful.
Thank you so much for finally having me.
Yay! Thank you. We have something very exciting to talk about today. Happy mum, happy baby. Well, we are expanding. We're only releasing our very first record. Yes, Move Over McFly, Move Over Tom Fletcher. It's all about Happy Mum, Happy Baby. We're going into music, people. We have teamed up with Decca Records and LifeScore to build a one-stop shop for quality, trustworthy educational music for baby, toddler and parent. Music is such a massive part of our family and I'm so thrilled with what we've created. I can't wait for you to hear it. Now, it's worth saying that all the sounds on the album, they are played by real instruments and they feature real nature sounds. There is nothing processed. It is all organic. And all of the music aims to be enjoyable listening experience for both the child and the parent. No plonky plonky piano. It's all just beautiful musicians with their instruments. Honestly, it's a joy to listen to. We all know the number one rule for getting your little one to sleep is to stick to a trusted routine. And my hope with this album is that our creation can be a part of that and make bedtime an easier transition for all. The Ultimate Baby Sleep album is here, and it encompasses three parts of baby sleep, and it runs in three sections: wind down, going to sleep, and staying asleep, running seamlessly from top to bottom for the ultimate baby sleep experience. And each section lasts around 30 minutes. So let's delve into each section and tell you what they're about. The wind down is a perfect calming music for bath time and any other pre-bed activity. This encourages special bonding time between parent and baby to prepare for sleep. The melodies I've chosen to feature within the music have a very special place within my own experience of sleep routine. I loved singing little ditties or little lullabies, and this, it's just got that lovely, gentle, melodic feeling to it. The melodies can be easily hummed by parents to capture the bonding power of a parent's voice. And actually, as you listen to the music, you might even catch a few melodies of some traditional classics that would just, they just fill my heart with such love. The next section we have is called Going to Sleep. How we created this was so interesting, and I absolutely loved the recording process to kind of really feel that breath actually of the musicians as they were playing. It also features natural sounds, and it entwines the lullabies from the previous wind down to encourage baby to nod off at their own pace and in a relaxed state of mind. And those two sections, they kind of work together and they build. We've found that this is the ideal transition for baby to acknowledge that it is now time to go to sleep. And then the next section, the final section, is during sleep or staying asleep. I like to call it staying asleep because that's the dream, people. But it provides 30 minutes of natural and environmental white noise derived from nature sounds. And then actually this leads into an additional 9.5 hours of natural white noise for babies to prefer continuous white noise once asleep. No waking up in the middle of the night to press a little button on a sheep. Not anymore. There's been so much thought and love poured into these tracks. We've gone through so many different versions. I've pulled on the music that I love, that makes me feel nice and calm. And together with LifeScore and Decca Records, we've really created something that I feel is really magical. I played it to my kids. They love it. I'm so thrilled. Could you imagine they didn't? And actually, I have to say that even as an adult, sitting at my desk and listening to different versions, I have often fallen asleep in the best way, in a very contented way. Some might call it work, some might call it a nice little nap. Either way, I loved it, and it was all because of this album. With 12 hours of continuous music to help your baby sleep through the night, we are so proud to introduce you to Happy Mum, Happy Baby, the Sleep Album. I can't wait for you to hear it and then for you to tell me how you're getting on.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.